What we're going to talk about in this, the sixth module of our series, is something called charging orders and also series LLCs. Let me start out with just a little review for a second. You'll remember that we have several ways of doing business. One of those is a general partnership. The problem with the general partnership is each one of the partners' personal assets are fully liable for all the debts and the problems that the general partnership may incur. Additionally, any one of the partners can bind the entire partnership. So you've got six different guys out doing business. They may not all agree on how to do business. Nevertheless, each one of them can conduct business and bind the other partners. That's a bad situation to be in. As far as the taxation of the partnership is concerned, it's a pass-through entity. Each one of the partners pays the tax. It is not paid at the business entity level. Then we have limited partnerships. In the limited partnership, there are general partners and there are limited partners. Funny thing is, the general partners are still personally liable for all the debts, the problems of the limited partnership. Now, the limited partners, they're only liable for the amount that they invest in the deal, so they have some asset protection out of the limited partnership. By law, the general partners control the partnership. They're the ones that do the business. The limited partners, they have no ability to do the business of the limited partnership. If they do get in and start doing the business, by law, they become general partners. Of course, each one of the general partners can do business on behalf of the limited partnership, and they can bind the limited partnership. The taxation of a limited partnership is, again, a pass-through taxation. Tax is not paid at the limited partnership level. It is paid by the individual general partners and limited partners through a K-1. The next business entity is corporations. You get the corporate shield. The individual owners, the stockholders, they're not liable for the problems associated with the corporation. Of course, the stockholders, they can't manage the corporation, they can't bind the corporation, they can't do business on behalf of the corporation. They are simply passive investors who are not liable for the debts and the problems of the corporation. The officers and directors of the corporation, they do the business on behalf of the company, and technically they are not liable for the debts and the problems of the company either. The corporate shield protects them as well as the shareholders. The corporation can be a pass-through entity, that is, the taxes are not paid at the corporate level, they're paid at the shareholder level. That's if the corporation is an S corporation. If the corporation is a C corporation, then taxes will actually be paid at the corporate level. And the last business structure that we have is the limited liability company. It's a hybrid between the limited partnerships and the corporations. It was developed in the early 1970s, started out in Wyoming. They didn't know how it was going to be taxed, so they went to the IRS and asked, how's this going to be taxed?
Almost 20 years later,
in 1996, the IRS got around to developing the check-the-box system. So the LLC can be a pass-through entity, or if it's taxed as a C corporation, the tax will be paid at the limited liability company level. Of course, the limited liability companies have members. The members are not liable for the problems, the debts of the limited liability company. The limited liability company also has managers. They're the people who take care of the company, do business on behalf of the company. Members don't do business, just managers. Now, you can have a member-managed LLC, which means that the managers have to be members, or you can have a manager-managed LLC, which means we can go out and we can get anybody to manage the LLC. They don't have to be a member also. The structures that give limited liability protection, and by limited liability protection, I mean they don't give total liability protection, but it's limited. The limited liability protection structures are the limited partnership, the corporations, and the LLCs. And the laws associated with each one of these structures encourage investors to put money in, take risk on starting and developing businesses. And the way that the laws encourage the investors is they give them the limited liability shield. corporations were originally designed to be big entities that sold stock. They sell stock on the New York Stock Exchange or the over-the-counter or whatever it is. And it was envisioned that there would be hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of owners of each one of these corporations. The corporation laws really weren't designed for the small businessman. They were designed for these big companies. Yes, the subchapter S corporation came along later and made it so that you could have a small business and be taxed as a partnership, basically. But the general laws of the corporation were not designed for a small business person. On the other hand, the limited liability company laws, the LLC laws, they were designed for the small business person. And there are some major advantages to the LLCs over the corporations for the mom and pop or a smaller operation. Now that we've done our little review, let's look at history for 2 seconds, because history gives us an insight as to the advantages of an LLC over the corporation. Before the corporations, you basically had a general partnership or a sole proprietorship as the way of doing business. If you had more than two people, you were in a general partnership. The problem with a partnership was when one of the partners got in trouble, they became a debtor, they got sued, there was some personal problem with one of the partners, well, the person who came against the partner who won the judgment, they simply took over the partner's interest in the partnership, which meant they became a new partner. And you suddenly had a new partner when one of the partners got in trouble and they lost their partnership interest. Because of the nature of a partnership, that new partner could go out, sell the assets, bind the partnership, do whatever they wanted, and the other two or three or four partners, they were just out of luck, and that's the polite way of saying it. Back in the 1700s, early 1800s, the British looked at this and thought, well, that's kind of not fair. You've got one guy out of six that screws up, the rest of them all get penalized, and they've lost everything they've worked their whole life for because suddenly partner number one is in trouble. So leave it to the British. They came up with an idea that said, okay, if the partner gets in trouble, they get sued, there's a judgment against them, we won't let the judgment creditor come in and totally take over their partnership interest. We will only let that creditor come in and take over the partner's economic interest in the partnership. That means that the creditor can stand in the shoes of the partner that was in trouble, and they can get all the economic benefit out of the partnership that the partner would have gotten if he hadn't been in trouble. However, the debtor-creditor that takes over the partnership can't manage the partnership. They can't bind the partnership. They don't have any interest in managing. They can't replace the other partners. They have nothing to say about the management of the partnership. They only get the benefit of the economic interest that the original partner had in that partnership. So in the early 1800s, Britain passed laws which created what we call charging orders. So the debtor-creditor's only recourse against the partnership is to charge the original partner's interest and take over or stand in and get the economic benefit that the original partner would have gotten. That protects the other partners. They can still go on. They can manage the business. They can conduct the business. The profit that they get out of it is still theirs. If they make a general distribution of profits, well, the other guy's interest goes to the debtor creditor, not to the original partner. But other than that, the partnership goes on, fat, dumb, and happy. So as far as the original partners are concerned, it's no big deal when one of the partners gets in trouble and somebody gets a charging order against their interest. Of course, if the original partners happen to like the guy who got in trouble, and they don't like the new debtor-creditor guy who took over and got the charging order, well, the general partners, they don't ever have to distribute any income to the new partner. They're just going to pay all of the money that comes into the partnership out as salaries to themselves. Of course, the partner who is in trouble, he's not going to be working for the partnership anymore. He's not going to get a salary. As a result, the charging order holder, the debtor-creditor, He ain't going to get much out of this deal if the other partners don't like him. What happens is the guy who's coming against the original partner has to get a judgment. They get a judgment, says this original partner owes me the debt. They get a judgment, says the original partner was in the accident and hurt me, and so I get money. They get a judgment. Then they have to go to the courts and they get the charging order, which allows them basically to put a lien against the original partner's economic interest in the partnership. Well, it only took the United States like a century to figure out that this was a pretty good idea. So they imported the idea of charging orders, and they applied to general partnerships and limited partnerships. This concept of charging orders doesn't apply to corporations, because the shareholders in a corporation, they don't necessarily manage the corporation. They don't have the right to bind the corporation. They don't have the right to manage, to do anything except elect an officer or director who then manages and operates the corporation. Lawyers look at that and say the shareholder is at least one step removed from the management of the company. So IBM really isn't too worried if one of its shareholders gets in trouble and loses their interests, their shares, in IBM. So what? We have a new owner of those shares. All that guy can do is elect officers and directors. And if it's IBM, one guy ain't going to make any difference in the management of this company. Now, if it's a little company and the owner, you, lose your shares, then the new guy can elect a new officer or director, i.e. themselves. And the funny thing is they now own your corporation and they do whatever they want with the assets. They manage it, they operate it, they sell it, they close it down, whatever they want to do.